Kyle, why are we here? Like, why do we exist? Why does any of it exist?
I'm really trying
to catch you off guard with the biggest questions.
Yeah, I mean, it really is the biggest question you could possibly ask, besides paper or plastic. yeah, no, I got an answer for this one.
Yeah, good.
I think it's mainly so that Neil deGrasse Tyson has something to gloat about on X, formerly Twitter.
Yeah, I like Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah,
he is. And if he's still on Twitter, I bet he is.
Yeah.
Welcome to Butter No Parsnips. Every week on Butter No Parsnips, your hosts Emily Moyers and Kyle Imperator take you on an adventure through the weird, wacky, wonderful, and sometimes even wicked world of one wayside word. Strange characters, delightful bits, and general joyousness abound. Join them as they test each other's etymological expertise.
Hey, welcome to Butter No Parsnips. I'm Kyle Imperator.
And I'm Emily Moyers. Kyle, this is an episode for the big questions.
Oh, gosh. You can hear me just trying to, shake off my ennui.
Yeah, get psyched up.
Yeah. Hit me.
All right, Kyle, let me hit you with a word.
Okay.
Kyle, your word is Elim. Y-L-E-M, Elim, can be pronounced Ilum.
Oh.
Kyle's turned into a Scooby-Doo zombie.
Creeper. No, Emily, I was introduced to this word and I can't remember what it means.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I never remember what any word means, but maybe hints will get me there. This is a noun.
It is a noun.
And it's about, space.
Ooh.
Particles. Does this have to do with string theory?
I'll be honest, I don't understand string theory enough to answer that question, but I think so. Maybe? I don't know.
Is it Latin?
It is Greek originally, but we got it through Latin.
All right, I'm going to give a guess, and then I'm going to ask for a hint, and then you're going to text me the answer, and then I'm going to say the answer out loud like I knew it the whole time. Is Elim or Ilum, is it? No, that wouldn't be that. We've talked about that already. It's quarks. okay, is Elim, the space around stuff, the not matter, the other stuff. But not antimatter.
Interesting. No, but I like where your head's at.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Would you
give me a hint, Emily? Yeah.
The clue I have for you is bang.
Bang. Bang. Oh, like the biggest one. The biggest bang. Big bang and Elim. You're going to tell me what this answer is, and I'm going to,
Yeah.
You know how sometimes you'll see people will close their laptop but the opposite way, breaking it in half? That's what I'm gonna do with my computer.
A Nova episode is gonna flash in front of your eyes. You're gonna be like, God, I knew that.
Emily, I give up.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't want to get even close to wrong. I just want to I want it to wash over me.
All right, I mean, you were close to right, except in the fact that you said it's not matter, because it is matter.
It's just matter.
Elim means matter, substance, or specifically the first matter in the universe. And in modern English, it is used in the context of the Big Bang.
Oh, I love this, Emily. You know, space really gets me going on these episodes.
Me too, buddy. I'm so excited.
All right, tell me all about Elim.
Let me tell you all about Elim. For consistency's sake, I'm going to just stick with Elim, but I think it's both. Elim ultimately derives from a Greek word, hule, which is usually Latinized as H-U-L-E, but that was later borrowed into medieval Latin and later into Middle English as hile, H-Y-L-E, which I'll be honest is confusing to read because it just looks like Heil.
Yeah, it's my alternate version.
That's right. Parallel universe Kyle.
Yeah, it's antimatter Kyle.
Antimatter Kyle. And this word originally meant wood, forest, or timber. It derives from the Proto-Indo-European root suel or sel, which meant wood, firewood, or beam. And this evolved into the Latin word silva, which also meant wood or forest. And this is also where we get the English word sill, like windowsill.
Whoa!
Which makes sense because it's a beam under your window.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, now that I think of it, I don't think I've ever used that word outside of windows. So yeah, of course.
Yeah, I don't know if sill has any other usage. Maybe it's a fossil word.
A tree fossil.
A tree, like a petrified wood.
Petrified. Yeah.
It's a petrified word. We've all got there. So hile naturally widened out, the usage widened out to mean substance or material, as in raw material for making stuff. So like instead of specifically wood, it could just mean any sort of raw material.
I mean, everything was made of wood back then, back in the England times.
Middle England times. No, yeah. We're talking about ancient Greek right now.
Oh, ancient Greek.
Yes. Which, I mean, a lot of stuff there is made of marble.
Well, it's only made of marble because all the wood stuff is gone.
That's right. Then it was all wood.
Yeah. It became petrified into marble.
They put in the marble later. But it was later used to mean matter, as in like general physical substance, by everybody's favorite Greek philosopher, Aristotle. Now, Kyle, you can feel free to take this question as a joke setup or a genuine request for information. I think I know which you'll take it as. But what do you think the ancient Greek concept of matter was?
All right, where's the joke?
You can answer genuinely, Kyle.
Okay, I think they didn't know. Because they were always going around asking each other, what's a matter to you? What's a matter with you?
So these were the Greeks that were on like a sitcom.
Yeah.
The ancient Greek sitcom.
But it was like a Truman Show sitcom, so.
Oh no, a Truman Show sitcom? So only one of them was a real person?
Yeah, the rest were hired by Aristotle. He was a real, real rough philosopher.
Oh, so Aristotle is like the Christoph in this scenario?
Yeah. No, I feel like there were a lot of wide range of opinions about just philosophy back in ancient Greek times. What period are we talking about?
The Aristotle times. Like, I mean, 3rd century BC? 4th century BC?
Like, I'm trying to remember what, in my philosophy class when we were learning about, you know, the cave with the shadows on the wall. And
are
chairs real or do we just think they're real and all that stuff?
Sure. But what about what made up matter? What four things made up matter?
Oh, four things that made up matter?
Yeah.
Raphael, Donatello.
Because they're all that matters.
They're all that matters. Four things that made up of matter.
Everything in the world was made up of these same four things.
I mean, was it like air, water, earth?
Yep.
Fire would be crazy if it was the fourth one, but that's what I want to go with.
It is the fourth one.
That's crazy.
That's the four elements,
name
Kyle.
Name one thing that's made of fire besides fire.
Fire.
Like, what a crazy element to have.
Well, but like anything with heat has fire.
Oh, I guess you're right.
Yeah. So the ancient Greeks, as well as the ancient Indians and various other civilizations through time, believed that all physical matter on Earth was made up of the four elements, water, earth, fire, and air. And then Aristotle put forth this theory that, or maybe he didn't put it forth, maybe he just put a name to it, that there was a fifth element that was like the element of the heavens, that was ether. That's a whole other thing.
That's fun. It's like a secret element you have to unlock.
A secret element that we don't have. Yeah, he was like, the four elements on Earth are always changing, but everything in the heavens stays the same. So that must be a different element.
Not to get too far off base, but I think some of that plays into alchemy and Trismegistus and all that stuff.
Yes, it does relate to alchemy stuff as well. And it touches on a few different names that we've heard on the podcast before. But we're talking about Aristotle. And Aristotle did contribute a few different concepts to these thoughts on matter and the elements. The one that is relevant here is a philosophical concept which was later termed hylomorphism.
Hylo what now?
It is basically the idea that, yes, everything is made of these four distinct elements, but these four elements come together to make up matter, and matter makes up everything.
Okay. So, like, the elements themselves aren't matter?
I think the idea is the elements alone are something different than matter.
Sure.
But the ancient Greeks didn't have a word for that. So Aristotle took this word hyle, which at the time meant wood or raw material, and used it to describe his concept of matter.
I'm stunned by how many times we've brought up Aristotle on the podcast for completely different aspects of thought.
Aristotle thought about a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
Real. I guess Aristotle's approach was like, I'll just cast a wide net rather than like specializing on any one thing. And that way I'll be remembered for everything.
Yeah. Aristotle was the original first, you know? Just wanted to be the first to comment on anything.
Yeah. I have a quote here from a translation of Aristotle's works by Ivor Leclerc that says, quote, "By hyle, I mean that which in itself is neither a particular thing, nor of a certain quantity, nor assigned to any other of the categories by which being is determined." Basically, what I think he means by that is hyle is just like featureless clay until it's molded into a vase.
It's just like, how do you think of this? When that doesn't exist.
Yeah, when it's 380 BCE.
Yeah.
Yes. So that is the ancient Greek concept of hyle in all its different forms.
How did this get applied to space?
Well, we're going to get there. Some time went by in the interim. But now that we've talked a little bit of etymology, I would like to talk a little grammar and phonics.
Oh, is this going to be hooked on phonics?
It's going to be hooked on grammar and phonics.
Oh, okay.
You might be asking yourself how we got from hyle to elim. And the answer is that elim is the accusative case form of hyle. So I assume that just clears it up.
Yeah, and honestly, we're good. We can move on to the next, what was you said after grammar? Phonics?
Phonics.
Accusative case, I feel like, isn't that what a lawyer does? A trial lawyer?
Yeah, that's Phoenix Wright.
Yeah. Objection!
Very good. So, hyle is a nominative case noun, which is the subject in a sentence, like I or he or who. And elim, the accusative case, would be the object in a sentence, like me or him or whom. Does that make sense?
It does. Who and whom helps. So hyle and elim are who and whom.
Yes. People sometimes have trouble knowing when to do who and whom. And the advice that I always give people is who you can replace with he and the sentence still works grammatically. Whom you can replace with him and the sentence still works grammatically.
Wow. I've never had this boiled down for me so succinctly and helpfully.
Yeah. Him and whom both have M's. And if they can both work in your sentence, then that's right.
I love this. Continue.
So in modern English, the only words we have in the accusative case, in that like object noun case, are pronouns. Any other kind of noun, we just use the same word for both the subject or the object. But English used to have, and a lot of other languages do have, the accusative case for regular nouns as well. There's like a different word you use when it's the object in the sentence.
It's really difficult to think about that, to think about doing that in English. Like,
yeah, like changing any noun if it's receiving an action rather than doing an action.
And how you would perceive language differently, you know?
Sure. But I guess we just make that correction in our heads, like based on context.
Yeah. I mean, like with anything. We just learn. Aristotle,
we just
learn. You know,
we're smarter than Aristotle is what it is. So in Middle English, both hyle and elim were used in different grammatical contexts, but both faded from usage. Elam was later revived into modern English, which we'll talk about in a second. And because modern English doesn't differentiate between nominative and accusative case, we just use Elam for both.
It's the funner of the two.
It definitely, yeah. And it doesn't look like it should be pronounced differently. But I do also just want to address on the note of pronunciation very quickly what I said at the top, that Elam can also be pronounced Ilam. That is down to something that happened during Middle English, which I think we've mentioned on the podcast a couple of times before. And I'm curious if you know what I'm about to say, Kyle.
Did it happen to have anything to do with the Norman conquest?
It happened around and after that. For sure.
It's like the vowel shift, the great vowel shift.
You got it, buddy.
Yeah. I have one of those every morning.
Oh, no, that's a vowel shift, Kyle. That was when the way in which we pronounce loads of vowels in the English language shifted. This happened, like, as you say, around the time of the Norman conquest, when there was a lot of French influence in English. But it also happened around the time that English spelling was standardized, which is like around the 14, 1500s, which is why English spelling a lot of times makes no sense, because the spellings were being set at the times when the pronunciations were very in flux.
Right, right. Just different people were like, this is the first time we're ever going to write this word this way, and this is how it'll be remembered.
Okay, but we're going to pronounce it different tomorrow.
Perfect.
Yeah, and if you look
at... Prefect.
Prefect. Yeah, and if you look at that, like, you ever look at that diagram of vowel pronunciation? That, like, diagrams where you pronounce it in your mouth and your throat?
Yes, I look at it and I say... I don't understand this.
No, absolutely not. But if you look at the this, like, you can see it mapped of like the great vowel shift on that diagram, and it's literally all the pronunciations just shifted over one space.
So funny.
Yeah, so ah became a became e became I. So hele became highly, and elim became ilim.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. that would just be really fun to use in like poetry somewhere. There's some sort of Ulippian device there, you know?
All right, Kyle, we've reached that point in the episode where I'm going to set the scene.
Okay.
We hit that point in almost every episode. The year is 1948. Kyle, give us a 1948 soundscape.
Hey, lady, you're looking good. I deserve that.
So, 1948, the theory has already been introduced that the universe began with the explosion of a single atom, although this theory has not yet even been called the Big Bang.
It's just the bang right now.
It's not big quite yet. But there are all these astronomers and physicists thinking through, like, could this be possible? How could that have worked? What evidence do we have? And two such astronomers were George Gamow and Ralph Alpher, current frontrunner in my ongoing quest to find humanity's worst sounding name.
Ralph Alpher.
Ralph Alpher.
It just sounds like Scooby-Doo trying to talk about alfalfa.
Yes, absolutely.
Ralph Alpher.
It's like Scooby-Doo guested in an episode of Little Rascals.
Like, zoink, Scoob. Look at that kid's hair.
Rodriguez's name is Ralph Alpher.
Yes, Gamow and Alpher, a professor and student at Johns Hopkins University's Applied Physics Lab. In 1948, Gamow and Alpher published an article titled, get ready, A Neutron Capture Theory of the Formation and Relative Abundance of the Elements.
I'm surprised by how much that sounds like a declamation from the 1400s.
It does, but also every scientific paper sounds like
yes.
That.
Yeah.
Today, the theory they introduced is called Big Bang Nucleosynthesis. And I'm going to try to keep this simple because we're at the risk of getting very heady here.
What? With nucleosynthesis? I hardly believe you.
So basically, the Big Bang, the explosion happens. And immediately afterwards, the universe is just like a hot, dense soup of only protons, neutrons, and electrons. The theory that they were positing was that the first elements to form out of that soup were the lightest elements, the simplest elements. Your hydrogen, your helium, maybe a little bit of lithium, some unstable beryllium, but like nothing more complex than that.
And heart, right?
And hot.
No, that makes sense. I can get behind that.
Yeah, it seems reasonable. And they had all sorts of like formulas and stuff in it. I didn't understand any of that. But the reason I bring this up, in that article, they had to come up with a name for that formless soup that came to make up the universe.
Oh, I see where you're going.
You can see where I'm going. So I have a quote here from that article. Quote, "Very shortly after the beginning of the universal expansion, the Elim was a gas of neutrons only." And then they go on to describe how the neutrons broke down into protons and electrons. But there's a footnote at the bottom that says, quote, "According to Webster's New International Dictionary, second edition, the word Elim is an obsolete noun meaning the primordial substance for which the elements were formed. It seems highly desirable that a word of so appropriate a meaning be resurrected."
That is beautiful. It's literally the perfect reason to resurrect that word.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It works spot on.
How did they find that word?
They dug it up in some old dictionary.
I feel like they've got better things to be doing.
Well, I mean, clearly they were doing them. They published literally like four papers in 1948 alone.
Wow. I mean, they were on fire.
For sure.
And air and earth and...
Good. Unfortunately, even in this specific context, with so good a reason to resurrect the word, usage of Elim was pretty brief. I think it never really like caught on in the scientific community. I think nowadays the term primordial plasma is more commonly used to refer to that early matter.
I feel like primordial soup is what I hear when I'm listening to layman's descriptions of this.
I think honestly the source I was looking at said primordial soup is one of the terms that gets used.
Yeah,
which I mean it's pretty good. Primordial plasma also has good like sci-fi feel to it, but Elim, I think it's worth resurrecting once more. You know, it's so versatile. It can refer to any kind of primordial goo, any substance that makes up everything in the universe.
There's something sacred about it. You know, there's something that feels, I don't know, like descended from the heavens about it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas primordial soup is just like,
That's what's on the menu at the cafeteria.
Yeah. At a Jurassic theme park.
But I think the possibilities with Elim are endless. So, Kyle, I think you should have no trouble using it in a sentence.
Oh, God. Wow. Just throw me in the cold water, huh?
Mm-hmm. Can just be used to generally mean matter, but it can also mean the first matter in the universe.
Yeah. I'll get a good one. I'll put something together.
Yeah, let it cook. It'll get there.
Let it cook. Let the soup cook.
Let the soup simmer. Gotta let those potatoes get soft.
That's the worst part about soup.
What is?
Waiting for the potatoes to get soft.
Yeah. That's honestly true. This is all good for the episode, right? This
it's really good. I think it's helped me. Okay. Shortly after the biggest bang occurred, the delicious Elim that was left behind was nutrition for the universe, but the harder elements that were potatoes in the soup
took longer
to become planets than we thought they would.
That's right. Yeah. Like oxygen was a potato and it just took a little more time.
Yeah, you got it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm with it. That totally made sense. Anyone who thinks that didn't make sense, I think it totally did.
Thank you, Emily.
Great sentence, Kyle.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Kyle, would you like to play a game?
I would love to play a game, Emily. Love it.
Excellent, because I've got one. Now that we've gotten all those bozos with brains that make sense out of here, your sentence weeded them out.
I should have started the episode with that, instead of keeping them on their toes.
Kyle, the game I have for you is called Big Bang Triviosynthesis. And you might have noticed that my introduction on the Big Bang Theory part of the episode was a bit of a skim, and that's because I knew that if I started talking about it, I wouldn't stop. I love talking about it.
It's great. We exist because of it.
It's true, theoretically. So for no other reason than to appease my exuberance, I'm going to ask you some trivia questions related to the Big Bang Theory, and you're going to answer them. Because I control you right now.
It's my favorite part of this podcast.
All right, Kyle, let's start simple. So the Big Bang Theory, as it was formally put forth in the early 1930s, was it put forward by A, an astronomer, B, a professor of physics, or C, a Catholic priest?
I'm going to go with that third one because it feels like... just a value check here, a vibe check. I feel like scientists aren't thinking big enough. You know, they got their formulas in front of them, but they need the priest to be like, hey, but what if? And then they're like, I'll prove you wrong. Oh, he's right.
I mean, I think you're on the right line of thinking here, but it was a trick question. He was all three of those things.
Whoa.
That's right. It was a trick question right out the gate. I want you off balance.
I really am. Our unreasonably brained audience is off balance, too.
Yes, his name was Georges Lemaître. He was a Belgian astronomer, physics professor, and Catholic priest. He was sort of building off of existing observations at the time and earlier that distant galaxies were moving away from Earth. And he theorized that that was happening because the universe must be expanding. And in 1931, wow, he further theorized that if the universe is expanding, then it must have begun as an explosion from a single point.
Wow. We gotta start combining those three professions more often.
Heck yeah. And he did, like, a lot of naysayers of the Big Bang pointed to his religious side, saying that, like, because the thing about the Big Bang Theory is, like, it leaves room for divine creation. You could say that, like, God caused the Big Bang, and a lot of scientists were like, you only believe in the Big Bang because it leaves room for God. Your perspective is limited by your religious beliefs.
Interesting.
So that was like a factor in that debate.
That's really fascinating that we don't talk about that anymore.
Yeah, it is. That is, it's a fascinating thing. All right, Kyle, next question. This explosion was dubbed the Big Bang in 1949 by whom? A, Lemaître himself. B, a now famous student of his. Or C, a naysayer of his theory?
This one's not a trick, right? It's not all three
it's
somehow.
It's not all three.
I'm going to go with a naysayer. It sounds like a joke name.
You got it. Yes. Mm-hmm. The term Big Bang was coined by English astronomer Fred Hoyle, who utterly rejected the theory even after it was supported. Hoyle was a very vocal supporter of the steady state model, which theorized that yes, the universe is expanding, but new matter is constantly being created to maintain a constant density. And yeah, there's debate about whether he coined the term as an insult. He himself was like, no, I just meant it as they said it was an explosion, so it's a Big Bang. But everybody else was like, no, I think you meant it as an insult.
I'm confused. In that theory, has the universe just always existed?
Yes, that is. Yeah, steady state believes that the universe has always been.
That is crazy.
But that was the big debate of the time, was Big Bang versus steady state.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
And Hoyle was very, very much on the side of steady state.
Okie doke.
So you're one for two. I've got one last question for you. The effective downfall of the steady state model and strong evidence in favor of the Big Bang theory was the discovery of A, the cosmic microwave background, B, the interstellar murmurs, or C, the celestial dust symphony.
This just sounds like three tracks on a space opera album, and I want that album.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. If somebody could go ahead and make that.
Okay, that third one's made up. Say the first two again.
The cosmic microwave background, or the interstellar murmurs, or the celestial dust symphony.
I think you made up that second one, too. I think it's the first one.
The cosmic microwave background, which is my desktop.
Yeah, it's your desktop. It's how I cook my food.
Yes, it is more precisely called the cosmic microwave background radiation. In 1965, radio astronomers Arno Penzias and Robert Woodrow accidentally, serendipitously, discovered these 3 degrees of radiation that were in all directions around Earth, which could only be explained as the leftover heat from the Big Bang.
Crazy that that is the only way to explain that.
Well, it was coming from everywhere. And that was, I've told this story on the podcast before a while ago, but that was, they couldn't figure out what those degrees of radiation were, and they thought it was bird poop on their radio telescopes. So they cleaned them, but the radiation was still there. So they were like, oh, wait a minute. You know what it could be?
A cosmic bird.
A cosmic bird poop. The first cosmic bird poop. The biggest cosmic bird poop. Kyle, that's everything I have. It was too much.
No, it wasn't too much. It was foundational. What a beautiful introduction to the primordial soup that has birthed us all. The primordial soup that we've been stewing in for eons. I'm always so overjoyed when you have a space episode. So thank you.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Did you have a good time?
I had, Emily, I laughed, I cried. We're hoping that those of you at home laughed and cried this episode. And if you did, we'd like you to remember that you can find Butternut Parsnips on social media, on Facebook and Instagram at Butternut Parsnips Podcast, and on TikTok at Butternut Parsnips. And if you liked today's episode, consider giving us a 5-star rating or review wherever you heard us.
And if you really like today's episode, consider donating to our Patreon at patreon.com/butternoparsnips. Donating $5 or more earns you a shout out either on social media or here on the podcast.
Thanks so much to all of you. You help us make what we make.
And with that, I've been Emily Moyers.
And I've been Kyle Imperator. And this has been Butternut Parsnips.
Butternut Parsnips is produced by Seth Glicksman, Kyle Imperator, and myself, Emily Moyers. The main and accompanying themes were composed by Kyle Imperator.